Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
Martin Niles is the Managing Director of the Australian Christian Lobby. Martin's back with us. Hello, Martin. Welcome back to 2020.
G'day, Neil. Good to be back.
Martin, let's start with one of those headlines that I know that for many will have been quite emotive, even over the weekend, because the very first participant in the voluntary euthanasia that is now able to happen in Victoria has lost her life. The woman, a 61-year-old cancer patient from Bendigo. We'd been expecting this, but even when it does happen, it becomes a shock. How did you feel when you heard the news?
Yeah, look, it's sad, Neil. I think, we had the laws passed, which was very sad. And now, of course, you've got the laws being implemented. And so, 61-year-old lady in Bendigo, who is by all measures, a prime candidate for euthanasia by the activist narrative. Which is that she's in the late stages of cancer. She was suffering and, she took her life, as they say, peacefully. And it's just because I know that this is not the end. That's why it's sad. It's sad for two reasons. Actually, it's sad firstly because I know that this isn't the end for euthanasia advocates and the euthanasia laws, but also it's not the end for Kerry. That's the other lie about euthanasia. The first thing is, in every jurisdiction where euthanasia has been legalized, it has at first been limited to people like her. It's at first been heavily limited to people in the late stages of, say, cancer usually, but it never lasts. It just never lasts. Because once you say that bedrock principle of the absolute sanctity of life is not the principle by which you are running your health system, once you say that the notion that a doctor can kill someone is not completely out of the question, but sometimes it certainly is in the question, then there's no end to where you can go. Because why a six-month prognosis? Why would you say that someone should live for 6 months and that should qualify them for euthanasia? Why not eight? Why are you so inhuman and non-compassionate that you wouldn't allow someone with 8 months to live to die? Or, why is it that it has to be physical suffering? People have been campaigning around mental health for years and years and years, and they want to destigmatize it and say it's just as valid a suffering as physical. And that exact argument's been raised in Belgium, the Netherlands, other jurisdictions, and it always wins out in the end. And then you can say, well, why does someone have to be over the age of 18? I mean, my 17-and-a-half-year-old daughter has only got a few months to go. Why are you being so cruel to her? She needs an empowered and a dignified death. And that argument as well comes up. And of course, we know now that children of any age can be euthanized in Belgium in particular. And you've actually had an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old, an 11-year-old and all sorts who had disability being euthanized. And this is where it goes. And that's where you get these harrowing and dreadful cases coming out from all over the world now of people dying for disability, people dying because they're depressed, people dying because they're alcoholics, people dying for... It's just unbelievable. Dementia patients who never requested it. I know this is where it's going to go because it's where it always goes because we've lost something. We've lost an immovable basic principle that actually is God's principle, which is that life is sacred. And once it's gone, you don't know where to draw the line.
It is an emotive issue, and interesting the way that the reporting will be and has been. And, the reporting, say, of this lady's daughters who say it was a gentle, beautiful and peaceful thing when their mother, drank the liquid and died. But you raise something very important in here, I think, for our conversation today and how we might appreciate these things on a political level, that there is a principle involved, and no matter how emotive and how even warm and fuzzy people might make things like this sound, as Christians, we do stand on a principle here, the value of human life, and we recognise that there are some challenges and some very drastic things that happen once you actually break that principle, which appears to be happening in Australia. But we are a principled people, Martin, and we can't forget that. We're compassionate, but principle here is very important.
Well, that's right. And, hard cases do make bad law. I understand. Oh, look, I completely understand the fact that some people are afraid of death. Some people have a certain anxiety around how that will play out. And some people see people suffering and say, I want to help. But, you know, some things sound helpful, some things even look helpful, and they're not helpful. That's one of the things public policymakers need to deal with all the time. But, you know, there is something else. And look, it's a bit sensitive, but it's true. Euthanasia enshrines a lie about death. I was reading the article and was really saddened, actually, because they said, well, you know, mum had an empowered death. And I thought, there's nothing empowering about death. Death is the ultimate disempowerment. Death is death, you know, no matter how you look at it, no matter how you dress it up. You know, it's the end. And the Apostle Paul calls it the final enemy. He says, you know, it is the thing that will get us in the end. And if anybody wants an empowered death, there's only one person that empowered death, and that's Jesus Christ. He conquered it. He rose again. And because of that, those who put their faith in him also conquer death. And that's the only way to empower yourself in death is to live through it because of what Christ has done and rise again as he's promised in the future and live with him. And, you know, it's actually an opportunity, I think, for the truth of the gospel, because it's what people crave. They want to overcome death, and there's only one way. Euthanasia won't do it. Euthanasia will take us down a dark path, there's no doubt. And death will still be real in the end. It'll still get you. But it's Christ himself that is the one who brings life in those circumstances.
And in a longer conversation, we would talk about palliative care and is enough being done to make people comfortable towards the end of their lives, and the risks about coercion and all of the challenges that come along with this sort of legislation. In some sense here, Martin, we wouldn't even be talking about euthanasia unless at the other end, when we talk about the end of life, we talk about the beginning of life. Of course, abortion in Australia is way, way, way down the track, out of control, you might say, because we have dreadful abortion laws in so many states around Australia. But let's come to something that is very current and something very much today, the abortion bill in New South Wales. And this is something significant because there's a special vigil for life that starts at noon today. It's a critical time for people in New South Wales especially to stand up here and try and head off this particular legislation at the pass. What are your thoughts for what's happening in New South Wales today?
Well, isn't it a concern, Neil, that we're talking just about, you know, sort of the same thing at the beginning of life and the end of life? And you just seem to see moves on this right around the country at the moment, where there is a move in Australia now to select categories of life that are less worthy of living than others, or categories of life that can be taken by other people, whether it's a doctor to assist someone to commit suicide because of their health, or whether it's a doctor to intervene because a woman has chosen to kill a child. And that's exactly what it is. There's no doubt that a baby in the womb is a human being. That's a scientific term. People argue over whether it's got personhood, but it's a human being, and you are extinguishing its life. And in New South Wales, we face a debate tomorrow on a highly, highly liberal, in fact, the most liberal abortion law in the world is going to be debated tomorrow. And look, indications are at the moment that it will pass. But, you know, as Damien Tudorhope, the New South Wales finance minister, said, he said, it will only pass if you don't speak up. People need to. There's a vigil for life starting at 12 o'clock today. And if people Google Vigil for Life New South Wales or visit the Right to Life website in New South Wales, they'll find the details for that. And that will continue until the bill is voted on, which is probably tomorrow. And also ACL have a campaign where people can look up who their MP is and shoot off an email. It's all very simple and easy. You just plug your details into a form at acl.org.au, our website. Google us, and there's a link at the top of the page you can click on and go through and send that email. But this is allowing, babies to be killed right up to the point of birth. So viable children that could live outside the womb, babies that could be about to be born, are able to be killed. And we know just how barbarous that is. I mean, they can feel pain from 16 weeks is merely one reason why that's wrong. I mean, extinguishing all life is wrong, but this bill goes even further.
Martin, I know that there'll be Sydney-siders who are listening to us talking about this now, and perhaps they've got a little bit of time on their hands over this next 24, 48 hours. The idea of a vigil for life, some people will think, well, I never do that sort of thing. I never march. I never really stand up and, you know, make a personal bodily appearance in any of these things to actually make a statement. But I, as I appreciate it, numbers are important when you have things like a vigil. It's going to be outside the New South Wales Parliament. starting noon today, and you're looking for people even to sign up in shifts. So you might not be able to be there for the whole 36 hours of the actual vigil, but people, you want them to be there in numbers because numbers are important. What's your encouragement to people who might be in the Sydney area or in that part of the world to be a part of this particular vigil?
I would say this. I would say, Neil, as you have said, numbers make a huge difference. Politicians would not pass this bill if they thought there was sufficient community opposition to this bill, especially amongst the people that vote for them. They just wouldn't do it. The reality is they just don't think that's the case. However, we can prove them wrong, and we have proved them wrong in the past. So it can work, because what we need to realise as well is that people who think this way about things like abortion law, there's actually far more of us than we've ever realised. And all we need to do is show up, be visible and do things. I always say we need to train people with conservative social values to be activists, because we're not. And activists are tiny minority groups that get a long way because they act. And we now need to just shift our mindset away from wishing things would happen or from protesting from the four walls of our house, and we need to actually act and be activists. And I'm telling you now, it works. Politicians are pragmatists. They understand it's all about votes. They understand this is why they're trying to rush it through. They don't want to give people time to notice and time to get up and get upset about it. And so we've got to prove to them that we are active and we're ready and we do have time.
Interestingly, when we talk about being an activist and this encouragement for people to turn up to a vigil and just be there making a statement, sometimes people think of, you know, activists as, you know, covered in tattoos and piercings and, and rent a crowd and, you know, prepared to, you know, be involved in a violent protest. But there is a certain sort of activism I think you're talking about, which is ordinary people standing up for a very important right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what sort of, you know, the idea of, you know, what you turn up wearing, what you turn up you know, whatever sign you might be carrying, those sorts of things are important. What do you advise people when they're going to be involved in a vigil?
Look, I just say, come as you are. In other words, look like a normal person, look as you normally would. I agree that the word activist carries baggage. And when people hear activist, they think of, yeah, you know, renter crowds, and they think of, you know, people with no jobs who are, you know, hanging out in the CBD of Melbourne and, you know, gluing themselves to sidewalks in Brisbane protesting veganism or something. But that's not what we're talking about. I think we need to give activists a good name again. In other words, all I mean is to act, and to act in a political way. And for us, it's just visibility. It's just numbers. And I would say, look, come as you would normally come and just be there. That's the most important thing, particularly if you're new to this kind of thing. And if we behave ourselves well, which, you know, people on our side very often do, and conduct ourselves in a way that is becoming you know, we can be proud of, but we actually show ourselves and we actually make a statement. Politicians don't mind that. They understand that it's part of the democratic process and it does make a difference and it makes us look good.
Well, for people in New South Wales, from noon today until midnight tomorrow night, a vigil outside New South Wales Parliament in Sydney. It's the only chance you'll have to make that sort of protest. Because they may well be making a decision in the New South Wales Parliament about abortion laws and, as Martin, as you say, the worst abortion laws. And every time there's a new bill like this, seems to go one worse than the last, and the ones that were last and the time before were the worst in themselves, worst in the world when it comes to abortion laws. Let me just point people to the Australian Christian Lobby website if you're wondering how you can be involved in that, and there is going to be a link there, no doubt, where you can sign up and be saying, well, I'll be there for 3 hours, and you can put your name down, you can be there and be a part of that vigil. One quick other one before I let you go. There's so many issues, and I'd love to be able to talk about all sorts of things, including those mass shootings in the US, or even an update on Israel for Lau. But there's one point I'd just love to get your insights for a few moments here, Martin. University of Queensland, there's been protests in Queensland, and those China protests, you know, people who are in solidarity with Hong Kong and the protests that have been going there, resisting the control that can come from China. And the interesting point just to draw attention to is that there have been some students in Australia, in Queensland, who've been scared to show their faces because the eyes of the Chinese regime are everywhere, and there are even threats to their families back in Hong Kong. What are your thoughts for the reach of China into Australia and the way that we perhaps need to be thinking about a Christian response, or the way we think about the incursion of China into all of our context, particularly universities? What are your thoughts, Martin?
This is a huge issue, actually, Neil. This is something that has really come home to me in recent times. I have friends in Hong Kong, quite a few, actually, and I was recently over there, and I would describe their mood. I was actually over there around the time of the protest when they first started. They're ongoing, by the way, and they keep sending me pictures through and all the things that are going on. And these protesters in Hong Kong are shining lasers into the security cameras as they protest so that they can't be picked up, and they're wearing, you know, things over their face and everything now as well. And I would say they're genuinely afraid. And these are normal, mainstream Hong Kong Christian people, and there's a genuine fear of China, a really strong fear, actually. And I can understand why in Australia they're also afraid. And I saw that the U.S. Secretary of State, I think it was, just flicking through the news last night, and he was saying to Australia, look, we need to reassess our relationship and our relationship with China moving forward in the midst of China's rise. And I think that's exactly right. I don't quite know what that means, but we're in a situation now where we're very close to an emerging superpower whose human rights abuses, whose disrespect for the rule of law, and whose control over their citizens is getting, frankly, out of control. They have this social credit system that they're rolling out. It's not quite finished yet, but they're rolling it out so that every single citizen in China has a score out of 200. And they use facial recognition cameras to monitor bad behavior. You know, things like being late for work, things like jaywalking, all this kind of stuff, and that'll get you minus points on your credit rating. But if you go and give blood, and if you go and volunteer for a local charity, your credit rating will go up. But of course, it's open to total abuse, and there's people over there who are political activists and all the rest of it who are now banned from travel. They're banned from getting on trains. They're banned from flying. The facial recognition system is being rolled out in a massive, massive way. There are cameras just everywhere, and they're building up and building up and building up, and you can't walk 20 metres without being scanned. This is what's happening. Meanwhile, the human rights abuses of, you know, churches being shut down, being vandalized, pastors disappearing in the night, priests disappearing in the night, the emergence of stories of concentration camps where they have up to a million religious minorities, a million people from religious minorities actually incarcerated under dreadful, dreadful conditions, and political prisoners and all the rest of it. I think people have sort of just sat back in the modern world and not realized that China has actually arrived at a position that looks a lot like some of the hideous regimes of the past that we look back at and condemn. And we found ourselves very close to these guys, very dependent on China for money, for income, for trade, and in a position where we need to remain friends with them for security reasons, for military reasons. But there's a moral problem emerging. And the moral problem is, how can we be friends and be so close when the situation is so dire and such? We're on the precipice, really, of some very bad things happening. People in Hong Kong are scared. I understand it. I understand why they're scared over here. There are consequences now if you cross China, even as an ordinary citizen. So, Neil, I don't fully know the answer to the question yet, but I do think that we should pray for the church in China in particular, pray for pastors in China because of the challenges that they're now facing, and also start to think very carefully about our attitude to, I mean, it almost is a question of Australian wealth, you know. We're so wealthy because of China. And I'm sitting here going, oh, gosh, that's going to be a problem in the future. That's going to be a moral problem.
Well, I like the way that you've directed us to the idea that there are no easy answers to this, and that prayer is going to be a place where we can bring our concern before God. And as you talk about the growth of the church in China, I know that there are significant things happen when there is pressure on the church, and interesting the way that the influence of the Chinese is overflowing their shores and is even on our shores in Australia. I'll point people to the Australian Christian Lobby website for more insights and understanding about some of the issues that are shaping the way that our society is developing. The Australian Christian Lobby website is acl.org.au. Martin Niles is the Managing Director of the Australian Christian Lobby. Martin, always appreciate your insights. Thanks so much for joining us once again today on 2020.
Thank you, Neil. That's my pleasure.
Before you go, thanks for listening.
There's lots more great audio on demand, or you can listen to us live at visionradio.org.au.
And remember, Vision is listener supported. Your donation,
large or small,
will help us continue connecting faith to life for hundreds of thousands of people across Australia and around the world.
Learn more or donate today at visionradio.org.au.